This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, this is Trey. Thanks for joining us for a Tuesday edition of our podcast, which is the day without Mary Langston, sadly. But my guest today knows her every bit as well as I do. He's an old friend of mine. You know, the world's a dangerous and complex place. It can be tricky to navigate where the threats are, where America should be in the various disputes around the globe. Foreign policy, for whatever reason, doesn't rank high on the minds of voters, at least not in the surveys and polls that I look at. But what happens around the world can and does impact us here, tucked away safely between two oceans. So what I thought we ought to do is survey the world with someone who knows a whole lot more about it than I do. He's the former director of national intelligence. He's the former United States attorney in the great state of Texas, a former U.S. congressman, a former mayor, proud husband and father of two, John Lee Ratcliffe. Director Ratcliffe, how are you?
Trey, I'm doing great. Great to be with you. Sorry to be missing Mary Langston, though.
Well, she has a Thursday podcast, and she gets better guests than either me or you. So neither one of us are invited to be on her podcast. Hey, before we survey the world, I read a list of potential vice presidential candidates. And I don't know if you've seen those stories or not, but some of the names made like a lot of sense to me. I saw Tim Scott's name. I saw Mike Pompeo's name.
That makes sense.
And then I saw your name. And what I started doing after I saw your name was researching which countries let Americans that are of retirement age move there on like a golden visa, or in my case, like a bronze visa, because I don't have enough for a golden visa. So I guess selfishly, I would like to ask, are there countries that would let me move there in the event you really were one heartbeat away from the presidency?
Well, I know you talked a lot about Botswana. I know that's a place that you'd like to go. And I think that you'd be well received there. With your fair skin, I'm sure the climate would be perfect for you too.
A prophet is never appreciated in his home country. Someone famous said that. So I think someone really famous actually said that. I want to start not in Botswana. I want to start in South America because it doesn't get a whole lot of attention. You and I were together with Mike Pompeo a couple of weeks ago, and he had just returned from South America, much closer to home than China. Didn't get a ton of attention. Is there something there that captures your attention that has you watching it?
Chinese investment. You know, Trey, you and I talk about China all the time, and the focus is always on the Indo-Pacific. But what China has done really around the globe, but what they've really tried to focus on, and I think Secretary Pompeo mentioned this, you know, as part of their what we call debt diplomacy, where they have sort of taken advantage of less fortunate countries around the world, many of whom are less fortunate because of a COVID, the impact of COVID on their economy that came from China. But they have the Chinese Communist Party has leveraged that into helping certain economies in exchange for the ability to gain a foothold there, whether that be a landing strip or the ability to build a port. Essentially they want to be better positioned with regard to their number one geopolitical adversary, the United States. And so This has really amplified aggressively over the last 3 years in the Biden administration. I don't want to say that it's only happened there. They were making inroads in this regard even when we were in office as part of, you know, the Chinese efforts to expand their influence around the world. But it has really intensified. And I think that that unfortunately is sort of a trend that we've seen with regard to how China has taken advantage of the current administration's unwillingness to confront them in places. And now they've gotten a better foothold. Should we have a conflict with China around the world, they'd have assets much better positioned here in the Western Hemisphere.
I don't want to waste a chance to talk with you on something as mundane as politics. So it will only be a very small part of the next question I'm going to ask you, but moving up closer to the U.S., Central America, Mexico, I mean, border related issues, immigration, number one issue among voters. It's partly political. It's partly law enforcement, narcotics, human trafficking. There is a national security component to it. You can address the politics if you want to, but I'm really interested your background, law enforcement and, you know, the head of our national intelligence. What catches your attention about having a border that is not a border?
Well, we haven't seen a direct impact from this statistic, but the when I tell you that there's been a 7,000% increase in the number of terror watch list suspects apprehended or encountered at the border during the Biden administration versus the Trump administration, that tells you, I mean, those are astronomical numbers. We had a total of 8 terror watch list suspects encountered in the entire 4-year period of the Trump administration. And, you know, we're now over 200 in the Biden administration. And those are just the ones that are encountered. Which, you know, leads everyone to wonder how many that were not encountered that are very dangerous people that have been identified as threats to our national security are now somewhere positioned within our borders behind the gates. So we haven't had a terrorist attack that relates specifically to that. But, you know, to your point, Trey, about, you know, looking at it from our national security posture, it's incredibly weakened. And unfortunately, this is a problem regardless of what happens in the election this year. Let's say President Trump is elected, and I would think that many Americans would agree with me that our border security would improve. But even a President Trump, a Trump 47 administration would inherit a whole host of problems from what's happened over the last few years, and that's one of them. So that, you know, that concerns me. You know, that's just on the sort of the national security posture front. You talked about all of the other impacts. I mean, to really see how Mexico, for instance, has done a 180 with regard to cooperating with the U.S. to better secure our border during the Trump administration to now essentially extorting the Biden administration, saying, look, give us 20. I think it's $20 billion in aid annually to address the root causes of these problems, or, you know, and if you don't, the flow of migration will continue. Those are the kinds of, you know, conversations that, you know, would have never taken place. And I don't think would take place if we had stronger leadership in the White House. And the impact of that, Trey, is, you know, it sounds cliche, but now, you know, every state is a border state. Every city is a border city because of the elements that you talked about and most where most people see it. And the reason that now all of a sudden immigration and border security are national issues instead of just the economy and things that people care about is because they see the crime that it is inflicted on their friends, neighbors and their communities. And, you know, the Lake and Riley stories are, you know, are unfortunately becoming far too commonplace in this country. In places that, you know, technically aren't border states or border cities, but is having a profound impact. And I think Americans see that, and that's reflected in the polls.
You mentioned Mexico doing a 180 and now sort of extorting the United States will help, but only if there's another country, Russia, that changed a little bit with the change in administration. I watched an interview with the Prime Minister of Estonia. It's a small country. most of us, I'm not including you, you probably could find it on a map, but I would struggle to find it on a map. I know it's close to Russia. Their prime minister makes the case that what happens in Eastern Europe directly impacts the U.S. now and certainly will in the future. How do you see that? The war in Eastern Europe is obviously capturing less people's attention now because of what's happening in the Middle East. Should we still be paying attention to it? Is there a possible end in sight? How do you view that war?
I do think it has an impact, and you know, it has become, as you know, Trey, within the GOP, you know, such a controversial issue. And you've seen, you know, even mutual friends of ours in the political space sort of change their positions on this. And I would tell you that the mind has changed somewhat with respect to it as well, just from the standpoint of, I think it's fair. I'll look at it from both sides. I think stopping Putin in Ukraine is incredibly important for a bunch of reasons. I do think for the same reasons that we saw a ripple effect from what happened in Biden's failure in Afghanistan, having an impact and frankly encouraging both Putin and Xi and all of our geopolitical adversaries from getting more aggressive. And I think if at the end of the day, Russia, quote unquote, wins in Ukraine, that's going to hurt America's standing, even though we don't have troops on the ground in Ukraine. You know, Biden has advertised the fact that he sort of put together this, you know, NATO coalition of countries to stop Putin. And if that doesn't happen, that's not going to be good for the United States. It's not going to be good for our allies who count on the United States. So I get all of that. What I also get is, you know, particularly within the Republican Party, the concern about sending more money and aid to a commander in chief who has had, at best, Trey, an incredibly schizophrenic and ineffective policy. I mean, they try and advertise of all the places around the world that somehow this is a success for the Biden administration because he's, you know, held together, you know, European countries. But the bottom line is Russia's gained more territory. And, you know, what you saw, I mean, let's review the Biden foreign policy with regard to Ukraine. Initially, he was going to deter Putin altogether because he was going to impose sanctions that he promised that Putin wouldn't dare move into Ukraine. Well, he did. Biden's response was the same response that he had in Afghanistan, which was cut and run. As you recall, he offered Zelensky, Ukraine's president, a ride out of town 2 days after the Russians invaded. And Zelensky famously said, "I don't need a ride. I need ammunition." Then what you saw was a really ineffective ability to provide support even when it was promised. We provided a total of 28 Abrams tanks over the course of a year when we have 350 that we could have easily provided for this, you know, counteroffensive that was promised and ultimately did not succeed. So point of all that is, the Biden administration has done nothing to inspire confidence that more money spent is going to improve Ukraine's potential outcome in prevailing in this conflict. I'm of the opinion that an outcome is going to come if there's better, stronger leadership in the White House. And of course, now, you know, that's either going to be, the alternative to President Biden is President Trump. And I do think, you know, President Trump has promised that he can end the war quickly. And I think he can. And I think the approach that he would take and, you know, as he effectively did before is, okay, where can we apply pressure to Russia? How can we force them to bring this to what we would deem a successful resolution for all parties involved? And that's applying, you know, economic pressure, military pressure, diplomatic pressure, the things that the Biden administration currently isn't doing effectively.
We'll be right back with more of the Trey Gowdy podcast.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we leave Russia / Ukraine, I want to quote Robert Gates, former Secretary of Defense, if I'm not mistaken. He may have also been the Chancellor of Texas A&M. You might recall that better than I do.
He was. Mm-hmm.
He famously said that Biden has been wrong on every major foreign policy issue of the past four decades. And if you think about that from a logic standpoint, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So to be wrong on every single foreign policy issue is quite a feat and almost defies logic. So I guess my question is, why? Why would he be slow on delivering tanks? Why would he say we'll permit a small incursion but not a major invasion? I mean, he was like trumpeted as the most experienced person ever in foreign policy, and here we sit.
Well, that's exactly right, Trey. I mean, what I would say from Robert Gates' standpoint is we were warned. We were all warned that he was going to be a terrible foreign policy president. The problem is the media told us just the opposite, that he was steeped in foreign policy experience and that somehow that was going to help us. To prove the point, Trey, we're spanning the globe. Find a place anywhere on the map in the world where the United States national security interests and posture have improved over the last 3 years. It's not Eastern Europe. It's not the Middle East. It's not the Indo-Pacific. You know, it's not our own southern border. There is no place. And what that tells you is that this is just an administration that is colossally bad with regard to their competence on foreign policy and national security issues. We have moved backwards everywhere, and our adversaries have grown stronger everywhere. We haven't even touched on the Middle East, but you know, let's just encapsulate that quickly. At the same time, the Biden administration was engaging in domestic policies like shutting down, you know, our energy production to hurt our economy and for our inflation to go crazy. He was rebuilding the Iranian economy and as a result, rebuilding entities like the Houthis and Hamas and Hezbollah, which are now household names, not to mention the fact that we've now watched, you know, an ISIS caliphate that was entirely defeated during the Trump administration now provide a tremendous threat to countries around the world. I mean, the attack in Russia, 2 weeks ago was ISIS-K, and that's the same group that killed 13 Americans at the Abbey Gate. So, he's managed to really get it wrong everywhere, and I think it's part of it is philosophical. I mean, you have people like, you know, Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, you know, who have just proven themselves to not be very good at this. I mean, Jake Sullivan, 8 days before the October 7th attack in the Middle East on Israel, said the Middle East has never been quieter in the last 20 years. And he spends less time working on issues there than any of his predecessors had done. And that just sort of, you know, if that doesn't encapsulate, you know, how terrible they have been at safeguarding American national security interests and those of our allies, I don't know what does.
I keep thinking that's the same Jake Sullivan that so fabulously misjudged Libya back when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. But maybe they're two former Jake Sullivans.
No, it's the same.
Oh, it is the same. Okay. Let's stay in that region. An Iranian military leader is dead. Another one. Reports are that Iran is sure to retaliate. Do you think they will? Man, if you were forecasting, are they going to attack? Like, the U.S. has been extremely careful not to do anything inside Iran except warn them of right. pending terrorist attacks. So they hit Syria and other like proxies. Do you think Iran will retaliate inside Israel or just kind of attack Israelis around the world?
Trey, we are in uncharted waters here. Look at this attack that you just mentioned. So Israel assassinated Mohammed Zahedi, who was the IRGC Syria-Lebanon chief. Two F-35s, six missiles. They hit the diplomatic sector of Damascus, Syria. And what your listeners need to know is Zahedi, the importance of this is he was Qasem Soleimani's replacement. Of course, you know, in the Trump administration, IRGC General Qasem Soleimani famously taken out. So Zahedi was responsible primarily for building up Hezbollah. He's going to be incredibly hard to replace, especially given the fact that the Israelis killed his deputy during the same strike. It really shows this was a great intelligence operation by the Israelis. I mean, they hit this near the Iranian consulate, near the Canadian, you know, embassy. It was very precise. The difference, and the reason I mentioned we're in uncharted waters, Trey, is this is something we should have been doing with the Israelis. During my time as DNI, with the exception of the Brits, we worked more closely with the Israelis to take the appropriate measures necessary to slow down and stop a hegemonic Iran, and we worked together. That's not happening here. Israel acted alone here. And the reason that I think we don't know exactly how Iran will respond, but that I suspect that they will respond directly against Israel is because they, like the rest of us, wonder what the Biden administration is really going to do. Are they really going to back up Israel? They have been backing away from the support for our most strategic military and diplomatic and moral ally in the Middle East now ever since October the 7th. And I think as a result, the group of people that we've been talking about not being very good at this, who constantly make every decision with a fear of escalation and seem to be paralyzed with inaction because they're a fear of escalating, actually have the net effect of escalating everything because our adversaries, you know, sense weakness. And, you know, in the case of Iran, supported, funded, directed 170 attacks against U.S. troops before the Biden administration really responded with anything that could be characterized as significant. So I do expect that Iran will hit back hard at Israel, if nothing else, just to see whether or not the Biden administration that has been publicly questioning Israeli leadership on these issues, whether we'll really have their back. And I hope that we would, but again, I don't have any confidence in that. And I don't know that many people that do.
I don't want to leave the listener with the impression that we don't think the former Obama/Clinton folks were good at anything. There was one thing they were really, really good at, which was unmasking American names in surveillance products. They had historically high numbers when it came to that. So I want to ask you one more serious question, then I'm going to have a little bit of fun with you before you go catch your tea time. The John Lee Ratcliffe that I met on his first day in Congress, I would have said his dream job, not unlike my own at the time, would have been to be the attorney general. You loved working for the Department of Justice, loved being a prosecutor. So did I. I would say that is no longer John Lee Ratcliffe's dream job. And the Department of Justice is not the one that you and I used to work for, and to which you would respond how?
I hate to agree with you, Trey. I hate to say that you're right. You know, that pains me greatly. But I have to concede that you are. It's not the job that I would love to do. And there was a time when, you know, my mentor, John Ashcroft, was the, was the Attorney General of the United States. And you and I talked about this, frequently, but the Department of Justice is not the same that it was, all the things that you've talked about. And I mean, nothing really underscores that more right now, I think, than the fact that a very important national security tool, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, Section 702 of that is set to expire. And there's real questions about whether or in what form it will be renewed. And those are fair questions because, you know, we have to balance the fact that that we want this important national security tool that can help protect our country, improve our national security posture, identify terrorists that would do us harm, and be helpful against all of our geopolitical adversaries as we collect foreign intelligence, against the fact that we've seen, and this is not a matter of opinion, but you know, the FBI director has admitted to me under oath that, you know, the FBI you know, illegally spied on members of the Trump campaign. And we know that they have misused some of these national security tools. So, you know, there's a mistrust within both the Department of Justice and it's one of its component agencies, the FBI, and it's well-placed mistrust at this point in time. And so, you know, but what we have to do, and one of the things I'm, you know, trying to work behind the scenes is to understand that we can't let something that's important for our national security go by the wayside just to punish the FBI for its misconduct. We need to punish the FBI without punishing ourselves and without rewarding China, Russia, Iran, and terror groups like, you know, Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Well, I hear you loud and clear that it was once your dream job and it would not be your dream job as things sit today, although you may not have a lot of control over whether you get the phone call or not for whatever the next Republican administration is. You're young enough that you could take that call for 15 or 20 years, I hope. And people don't talk about this a whole lot, but the U.S. attorney in Massachusetts who made false statements under oath to the inspector general and is not prosecuted, and Jeff Fortenberry, you know, doesn't score a 100 on a memory test given 8 months after the conversation or 6 months after the conversation with the FBI. That's a Department of Justice that makes no sense and has become politicized. And as soon as somebody can explain to me why there was disparate treatment between Rachel Rollins and Jeff Fortenberry, I'd love that, but we're going to end on a happy note because the Masters is coming up. Two of my favorite memories are going to the Masters with you and playing Augusta National with you. When you speak, you mentioned John Ashcroft. It was another one of your mentors slash friends slash influences in life that enabled you and I to play together. Lou Holtz, when you think about the Masters, what do you think about?
Oh, tradition, nostalgic for my childhood. I mean, you and I have talked about, I mean, we have memories from, you know, the great golfers like Jack Nicklaus, you know, from our childhood through the years. And the fact that, you know, it's that thing that never changes. That's what I love about the Masters more than any other golf tournament is that their willingness to preserve that nostalgia and traditions, you know, even keeping, you know, the same, you know, trying to keep the same prices from, you know, 30, 40 years ago. You know, and it's just an incredibly, you know, obviously it's an incredibly beautiful golf course, and it's exciting. So I have nothing but, you know, the best memories of the Masters and look forward to it, you know, every year. And, you know, I'm fortunate now is that, as you know, I play golf out at Dallas National, and we've got, I think, 7 or 8 members that'll play in this year's Masters. You've got Scottie Scheffler and Bryson DeChambeau and Jordan Spieth and Will Zalatoris and Tom Kim, and I think Sebastian Munoz and Carlos Ortiz are also in the field, if I'm not mistaken. So it's become even more special because you get to know those guys and like those guys and then root even harder for those guys. So those are the guys I'd like to see do well this next week.
You know, I used to pull for Scottie Scheffler too. In fact, he probably was my favorite golfer to pull for. I was so impressed with not just his play, but the way he conducted himself after rounds, interviews, having people who can't break 100 ask him about putting. All of that led, he was like my new favorite golfer. And then I heard that he gave you a lesson on the driving range at Dallas National.
A swing tip.
Okay. Okay. I don't pull for him at all anymore. And that may sound like petty and bitter and small to a lot of people.
But that's you.
but Scotty Scheffler needs to stay out of the battle and the conflict that I have with you. Like Brad Faxon gave you a putting tip. And I haven't spoken to him since then. Now, to be fair, I hadn't spoken to him prior to that either, but I haven't spoken to him since then. And Scotty Scheffler went from number one on my list of people to pull for. He's not in the top. He's not in the world top 1,000 rankings because he told you to keep your arms extended as you came into impact. So if you see Scotty Scheffler again at that fancy club that I haven't been able to play yet, I don't know why I haven't. Do I have to wear a shirt with a collar to play there?
And shoes. Yeah.
And shoes. Well, then I probably am not going to make it there, but I want to pull for Scotty Scheffler. I really, really, really do. But wow, he's going to need to stop inserting himself.
You should take it as the highest compliment, Trey, that I'm getting, you know, swing tips and putting lessons from the top golfers and putters in the world, because it means that much to me to be competitive with you on the golf course. So you should take that as a high compliment. No, why would I share them? The goal is to win and not just win, but, you know, hopefully humiliate you.
I've asked you 20 times, what did Faxon tell you? And you come up with this like gibber. It may as well be in Latin. We'll be right back with more of the Trey Gowdy podcast. So, all right, let me ask you this. I started by sharing my fear that these articles that you were under consideration to be the vice president might be accurate. There are articles out there, and there are also a lot of articles out there that when and if there is another Republican administration, you're going to be asked to come back. But you seem happy in private life.
That's true. I am happy in private life.
So you were in a law firm with your wife, Michelle. So you're used to being kind of the weak, slow wildebeest in a law firm. You practice a little tiny bit of law now where you're also like the slowest zebra in the law firm. You've got a lot of other things going on. Why in the world would you want to go sit for Senate confirmation when you have such a good life?
For the same reason that you would if you were asked to serve, Trey. I mean, I'd consider just about anything to save our country. And I don't think there's any sane person who can look at what the Biden administration has done over the last 3 years and not think that we need to be rescued from that damage. And so, you know, if the next leader of the free world and commander in chief and president of the United States, you know, asks me to serve in some role, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that that's going to happen. But if it were to happen, yeah, I would certainly, you know, consider it. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, if a president, really any president, asks you to do something to help the country, you ought to at least look hard and see if there's a way you can salute smartly and say, you know, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am.
I do want to look very hard at it, very closely at it, including the salary, which means that you would not be a member of Dallas National because you couldn't pay the court fees. Now, I know you would, and one of your children is wearing the uniform of our country too. So I know that you will be gone if asked. And I can't imagine any Republican president for the remainder of my lifetime not wanting you to be in their administration. But selfishly, I like you in private life, but we'll see what the future holds. Before I let you go, UFOs, everybody that knows I know you ask about UFOs. I didn't believe in them, John. I did not. Until I saw your tee shot on number 9 at the par 3 course at Augusta National. I've never seen anything in the air that resembled the shot you hit on the par three course. So I now am a believer in UFOs. Is there any, I know you get asked all the time about it. What is your stock answer when you are asked about UFOs? Well, you converted me because I played golf with you.
Well, I mean, you know, I think, I get asked all the time, are there aliens? And, you know, the answer to that very clearly, unequivocally, is yes. Joe Biden has let in 9 million aliens illegally in the last 3 years, by my count. So, I think that's the most definitive answer I can give you.
Well, I know that if you told me, what is it called? Area 54, Area 51, something like that.
51.
I know if you told me, you'd have to kill me.
Yeah.
So I know you're also tempted to want to tell me, but we'll save that. Thank you for spanning the globe. All your little friends at Dallas National that are helping you with your short game doesn't need any help, but some of the rest of it was a little wanting the last time I played with you. I want you to let them know there is a price to be paid for helping you. And maybe I will never be in a position to extract my revenge, or maybe I will. Particularly that Scheffler guy. He needs to leave you alone when you are on the range and not offer you any insight or advice. I don't care how bad you're struggling. In the spirit of Easter, I mean that.
Well, I would relate all of that. I'm sure the response is going to be, Trey, who?
Yes, that will be the response.
I'll certainly convey your idle threats.
actually, I do. He is the number one golfer I'll pull for right now. I mean, Kisner's not playing like he used to, and Will McGirt's not playing like he used to, but he is number one. I do wish he would stay out of this. I wish he'd be Switzerland and stay out of this battle between you and me. But maybe he's such a nice guy, he just can't help it.
You know, you've got your friends. I know you and Lindsey Graham. I'm sure Lindsey give you some great tips that will improve your game. You know, you go to Lindsey, I'll go to Scotty, and we'll just see who fares better.
I would rather take swing tips from Tim Scott, who doesn't play golf, than take swing tips from Lindsey Graham. I do. There are some really good golfers at my club. But I'm waiting. I'm waiting until I actually can get a pair of shoes and a shirt with a collar and I get invited to Dallas National. And then I'm going to have a series of lessons that will all wind up on Mr. Underhill's tab at
Bushwood.
Yeah, at Bushwood. Yeah, at Dallas National. John Lee Ratcliffe, former everything, Director of National Intelligence, U.S. Attorney, Congressman, Mayor, current private sector, but we'll see for how long. Thank you for joining us and spanning the globe.
Thanks for having me, Trey.
Thank you all. We'll see you next week. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.